go to Honolulu. How many of you have been to Honolulu? Waikiki?
Yes.
Yes. So, we have also seen. If you go to Honolulu, then you will see the surfers. They are trying to catch those big waves. Of course, sometimes they get eaten by sharks. That's another thing. But you will see that the surfers, they are coming in on the waves. They are enjoying surfing, riding those waves, you see. So, we have a better wave than the surfers have, because we don't have any sharks to worry about. And we don't have to worry about, you know, an airfare all the way from, you know, from Niles to Honolulu, which is not cheap ticket. And have to worry about, you know, getting hit and zonked on the head by our surfboard. See? And we don't have to worry about, you know, bad weather or overcrowding at the beach or, you know, anything like that. We have an incredible wave. Actually, we have the ultimate wave. And we have the knowledge also of how to ride that wave eternally. That wave is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Under the guidance of the expert spiritual master, you see, you can master the art of riding that wave. If you can catch that wave and not wipe out, that's a lingo they have among the surfers. If you fall off the wave and get knocked off your surfboard, that's called wiping out. Well, there's also spiritual wiping out. It happens sometimes. Somebody rides the Hare Krishna wave for a time, and after a while they wipe out. But those who are well-trained, who are expert, they can ride the wave and just continue to ride it eternally. So that knowledge is given by the bona fide spiritual master. How you can actually absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 4 weeks a month, and 12 months a year. And you can even throw in leap day every 4 years too. And this is such an amazing thing. You can. How many of you work jobs? Do you work? That was your hand, not hers. Has gone. She's a little bit little for a job, but she sure is a big hand. Maybe mommy gives her some chores in the house. Yes. So how many? See, how many are working jobs? 4, 5, 6. Yeah. So how, just imagine if you could ride an incredible wave that would even carry you through your work week, you know what I mean? How ecstatic that would be if you, because we know, you know, the normal Monday morning blahs, you know, get your job Monday morning. They didn't have a song about it, Monday, can't stand that day. So actually, if you're fixed in Krishna consciousness, then every moment is just an exciting thrill. Doesn't matter if you're going to your job or you're stuck, you know. Of course, there's no commute, there's no traffic jams out here like they have in the big cities. You're fortunate. But maybe you have to, maybe on the way into South Bend, who knows, you get caught up in a jam. But in Krishna consciousness, you can just glide through all of that stuff. Actually, you fly over it. Just like when there's very turbulent weather on an airplane flight. Then the pilot will be authorized to go to a higher altitude to get above the turbulence, you see. So this material world, it's turbulent. It's a very turbulent place. But there are higher altitudes available. And we are giving you an airplane which is very suitable for those high altitudes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If you will take shelter of this airplane which is being piloted by the expert pilot, the spiritual master, you see, Krishna consciousness, then you will no longer be, then you will become actually impervious or protected from all of the turbulence of material existence. And there's so much turbulence here, actually. We don't remember, but being born was a very turbulent thing. There we were, packed up nicely, safe and secure in our mother's womb. Of course, we were bitten by worms, that's another thing. But there's a certain security, being packed up tightly and tacked up snug and tight in that bag, just like on a cold winter day, you're under the blankets. You know, there's a certain security, but then all of a sudden, one day, in a very painful, traumatic experience, we were born. You see? And then after we got out, we got sick, you know, we got a runny nose, or we got a fever, or we got a stomach ache, we were vomiting, you break your foot. There's so many anxieties, and you go through all that, and finally you just get old where you're always in pain. And then finally it just gets so bad you just die and get out of it. So it's, you know, it's a lot of, that's turbulence. It's called the fourfold misery. It's the fourfold varieties of turbulence, you see, are there attacking us. And then in between those, you also have what are known as adi-atmic, adi-bodhic, and adi-daivic miseries, miseries of the mind and body, miseries caused by other living entities, and miseries caused by natural disasters like tsunamis. Recently we had, you see. So this is actually a lot of turbulence to deal with, and nobody really wants that turbulence. Everybody would actually prefer just to enjoy like anything. Wouldn't you rather just enjoy like anything all the time? What's your name?
Jason.
I'm sure you'd rather just enjoy all the time rather than have to face traumatic, devastating circumstances. But those traumatic, devastating circumstances afflict all of us from time to time. We're all destined to actually undergo them sooner or later. So why not prepare oneself to deal with them in such a way that you're not disturbed by them? That is intelligence. That is called self-realization, the science of self-realization. By proper training, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, you can actually become a fully self-realized, enlightened being who is absorbed in transcendental consciousness beyond all the sufferings of material existence, 24 hours a day. The neat thing about it is you already have it within you. Did you know that you're actually a spiritually enlightened being right now? And it's just covered by a fog? You knew that? Did you know that?
Maya.
Yeah, that's right. You have pure enlightened consciousness, but the cloud of Maya right now is preventing you from experiencing it. It's like you're a multimillionaire, but they're not letting you access your account and you're struggling to pay your bills. It's kind of silly, actually. Just imagine if you're a multimillionaire and they're getting ready to repossess your car. Does it make any sense? You see? It doesn't make sense. Nothing. It doesn't make sense at all. If you're so wealthy, you should be enjoying your wealth. Why you should not have access to your wealth? But Maya is denying you or preventing you from having access to that enlightened, all-blissful, all-knowledgeable, eternal consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Maya is somehow in there preventing you from entering into that domain which is yours, which is your rightful property. So we shouldn't settle for that. We should not just say, okay, Maya, if you don't want to let me in, I'll just serve you. But in this material, that's what we're doing. We're serving Maya or illusion. And why should we serve Maya or illusion? All she's doing is not letting us into our rightful domain of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And we're so dedicatedly serving her because she's giving us so many false promises. Try to pacify our minds. I know you're not happy now, Jason, but you know, just keep working a little harder at the office, get that promotion, and then you'll be happy. He's intelligent. So, but Maya eggs people on like that. She makes people think that, yeah, if you just struggle a little bit more, you know, just add the new addition on your house, or you know, just retire and move to, you know, St. Petersburg and play shuffleboard with all the other senior citizens, then you'll really be happy. That was what I dreaded when I was in college. That was my realization. I said, what's the purpose of working so hard when all I'm going to do, the only result of this will be, you know, I get a house, I get a wife, I get some kids, and I get old, and I go to St. Petersburg and play shuffleboard, and then they bury me 6 feet under, and I get flowers on my grave once a year until they forget about me completely. What's the point of working so hard if that's all I'm going to get? Does it make sense? I mean, I was a good student. I was on the dean's list. You know, I was in the honor society. I was a recognized student. I was a leader on the campus. I had so many things, materially speaking. I was an award-winning public speaker. I mean, I had so many things going for me, you know. What's the point of this whole thing? What is the point? This didn't make sense. I want to know, what is the purpose of life? They want to know, what do you want to major in? But I want to know, what is the meaning of life? You see, what do you want to major in, boy? What's your career field? I don't know. I just want to know what the purpose of life is. You know, tell me that. That's what I want to know. But no one could tell me what the purpose of life was. Not one professor. Actually, I used to wander the campus bookstore in the philosophy section, looking at the titles, trying to find some clue. There was one book which is a combination of two essays in one publication by what was his name? That European existentialist. You remember that name? I can't. Anyway, he was. No, that wasn't Sartre. It was the title was, there was two essays. Kierkegaard, yeah. The two essays are called Fear and Trembling, and the other one was called The Sickness Unto Death. And so when I saw those in the same book, I connected them as if they were one title. And I said, that explains reality, as I was experiencing it at the time, you know. It's a state of fear and trembling, a sickness of fear and trembling, which you just endure until death. That was my take on life at the time. And that's why I was looking for something better. But none of the professors, we had a course called Basic Studies, of course, you know, Basic Studies 101. Of course, you know what the abbreviation is, BS 101. That was the campus joke. It was a campus-wide course that everybody had to take. It was kind of an interesting course because it was an interdepartmental course in a big auditorium where they have one day a professor from the history department, the next day the literature department, the next day the philosophy department. It was a very interesting concept for a course, based BS 101. And there was four semesters of BS to give you an overview of the whole Vedic culture. excuse me. I'm glad you were awake. Western culture. The whole Western culture. And there was nothing there that really made any sense. You know, we learned about the Tigris and the Euphrates and, you know, the Roman Stoics, Marcus Aurelius, who said you just have to tolerate the suffering, you know, be tough in the face of the suffering. But they didn't really tell you how to get out of it. They didn't really tell you how to get out of it. And that just wasn't enough for me. If I'm going to invest my time, my energy, and my parents' money are getting invested, I should be getting something really tangible out of it. And they didn't have it there. They didn't have it. You see. So, luckily, I came in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. And he actually gave me that knowledge and that process by which the knowledge could be fully realized. Not just theoretical, but you could actually live in it. You could experience it at every second. When you woke up in the morning, you were living it. It was vibrating all around you, you see. That Prabhupada gave me by his kindness. Not just some nice flowery ideas, you see, that you can, you know, win friends and influence people with, you see. But an actual tangible existence, another domain of reality that you could actually enter into and live in at every second, even while you're here doing your ordinary activities, as a student, as a professor, as an engineer, as a doctor, a lawyer, a housewife, whatever your identity is here in society. That's the amazing thing about it. You don't have to be a renunciate. You can be a politician, you can be a businessman, you can be anything and be an enlightened Krishna conscious being. Arjuna is the classic example. He was a warrior. He wasn't a renunciate. He was a warrior fighting a battle. And he became a fully enlightened spiritual being, fighting a battle in a state of pure meditation. Can you imagine? Fighting a war successfully in a meditation. I mean, you can imagine somebody fighting a war in a meditative state and getting killed by the enemy. That's pretty easy to imagine. But just imagine somebody fighting and being purely absorbed in a meditative state and actually winning the battle. And that's amazing. That's really amazing. He was purely absorbed, completely absorbed in a meditative state at every minute, and he won the war. He won. Wiped out the enemy. So this is what we are teaching. We are teaching you how to be ultimately successful in everything that you do. Everything that you do, at every second. How to realize every moment of your existence is the most opportune moment in history. Tangibly experience that and feel that excitement at every minute. That's what we are teaching you. It's called Krishna consciousness. This is real. It works. It actually works. So, perhaps you have some questions. Or maybe you already self-realize you don't need to ask anything. Question?
I was going to ask you, what year did you receive initiation?
Yes, that is all the mercy, of course, of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. To be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master is actually the greatest mercy you could ever hope for. It's stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadai Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. So after, it's described that after wandering through millions of lifetimes from the higher planets to the lower planets, one living entity who is very, very fortunate receives, in my case in 1971, by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, the seed of bhakti. So, of course, I began chanting in 1968. I didn't even know about the movement, but somebody who had picked up the mantra in Haight-Ashbury taught it to me. And I started worshipping Krishna in my apartment. I took to it so naturally, I must have been doing it in a previous lifetime, because there was no devotees to train me. This person who taught me the mantra wasn't worshipping Krishna. But I took the mantra and I found a Gita, just like the verses only, not Prabhupada's version. I found a verse in the Gita where they had translated this verse correctly. You know, if you offer me beloved devotion, a leaf, a flower, food or water, I will accept it. So I had the mantra and I had that verse. So I said, wow, this is amazing. God will actually personally accept what I offer Him with love. So I started doing that in 1968 in Denver. I started offering all of my food to Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna mantra in front of my little altar. And that eventually led through a whole series of experiences to becoming Prabhupada's disciple in 1971. But that initiation is a very essential thing, because that's when the solid connection is made. Just like you can go to the university and you can audit a course, it's interesting. But if you actually enroll, then you get credit. If you register, you see, then you get credit. So I have many students. I have an e-course. I have like 20,000 people taking my e-course. But I encourage the students that they actually should become formally initiated, register into the actual system, the guru-disciple system. Because that, from the point of initiation, that's when you really start to make advancement. So I recommend You should do that. You should become fixed in following the basic sadhana principles and take initiation, because then you really feel how you're progressing. Then you're really pleased. Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas will be so pleased, and they'll just shower their mercy upon you. So I have set the example. Now you kindly follow that example. I took initiation. Now you also take initiation. That's my request to you, George. Bhakta George. Become fixed in this process and become initiated disciple. You'll be glad you did. You'll be so glad that you finally decided to dive into the jar of honey. Yes. Questions more? So, I know you have questions. I know you have questions. It is not coming out yet.
Who is Krishna?
Oh, this is the most wonderful question. I love this question. I was asked this, we did a TV show on the subway in Helsinki, and I was asked this question on our TV show also. Who is Krishna? And this is absolutely the sweetest, most wonderful question. I'm forever indebted to you for asking me who is Krishna. Of course, we say Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but what does that mean? We can understand that nothing comes from nothing. Everything comes from something. This rug. What is your name?
Jeremiah.
Jeremiah. If I told you, Jeremiah, this rug just popped out of nowhere, you would think I was, bluffing you. But this rug just manifested out of nothing, out of thin air, just even then, come on. So there was someone who made this rug. And the ingredients that went into that, they came from something. So you can trace out anything to its source, and then to that thing had its source, and that thing had its source. You finally get to that source that has no source. It's the primeval source. That is Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. He says, I am the source of everything. All spiritual and material worlds and material and spiritual things emanate from me. So that is understood. Now, even the scientists are looking. The atheistic scientists are also looking for the origin of the universe. So everyone understands there's an origin. You can try to find out that origin by research going on for hundreds and thousands of years. But if that origin, who has the ultimate power, all the power that exists comes from that origin. So that origin has unlimited power. If the origin itself or himself, whichever the case may be, chooses to reveal itself or himself to you or herself, then you can know that origin. All the power that exists, the power of millions of hydrogen bombs, that original source, all the power comes from there. Everything. So that original source is indeed all-powerful and has the power to do anything. Absolutely. Unlimitedly. So we see that from that original source, so many persons are coming out. You're a person, Jeremiah. You're not an in-person. You have a personality, you see. You dress in a certain way, which is according to your personality. You see, other people dress in a different way. Huh?
I'm in trouble then, huh?
You're in trouble?
According to my personality.
Actually, but you can use your personality to get out of trouble also. In this material world, that's a fact. Our personality gets us a lot of trouble, that's right. But you can use that same individuality, that same uniqueness, use it in an intelligent way under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master and become a liberated person. We don't have to deny our personality, our individuality. We just have to use it properly under the guidance of an expert spiritual master. And then we realize everything. And then we actually achieve everything. So, since from that original source, so many persons, such as Jeremiah and Jason and jords are coming out, you see. We can understand that original source must possess personality, otherwise how can personalities come out of it? So therefore, that ultimate source is a person. Now, who is that ultimate source? And that's the next question. How will we find out? Well, of course, Krishna is claiming that he's the original source. And he's able to back it up also. He revealed to Arjuna what is called Vishvarupa, or the universal form. In that form, Arjuna was able to see everything that exists, not only past, not only present, but also the past and the future. And not only was he able to see everything in that particular place, but Arjuna was able to see everything that's in the past, present, and future that's taking place in every location. In other words, that Vishwarupa included all times and all places. He became cognizant of everything that is ever, that is, was, or will happen in every single location. He was able to see it all by Krishna's showing that form to him. And of course, it was pretty scary. He said, I've had enough. Let me just see your original two-armed form. That's enough. He was absolutely terrified to see it. But so Krishna has shown what no one else has ever shown. He's able to demonstrate to his devotee, Arjuna, everything past, present, and future that's happening in every single location throughout the totality of existence. He's able to see everything. So that is called the Vishvarupa, universal form. So therefore we accept Krishna as the original source, because he is claiming, Arjuna is claiming, and all the great Vedic authorities accept Krishna. Now if you can bring someone else and you can give good argument that actually Krishna may be a source, but he's not the original source. There's someone else who is the origin of Krishna. If you can bring someone else, then we will give up Krishna. We will worship whoever you bring. We'll become your disciples, you see. But no one has ever been able to do that. I've been offering this for 30 years. I can judge from my experience that if there was such another person, certainly by now he would have been revealed. Because I'm a lover of truth. I'm not a blind follower of Krishna. I'm not a blind follower of Prabhupada. I'm a lover of truth. So I've always made this offer. If you can show something higher than Prabhupada, I'll become your disciple. I'll give up Prabhupada and become your disciple. But no one's been able to do that. In fact, I even offer a cash reward. I'll give you $10,000 cash if you can show me something higher than what Prabhupada has taught me. It's still, no one's been able to come up with anything. No one has even come forward to even try to claim the prize money. No one's even come forward. Not one person has come forward to try to claim the prize money. So I'm very convinced. Because Krishna himself declares that he's the origin. Brahma declares that he's the origin. Everyone claims that he's the origin. And the scientists, even the atheists, understand there is an origin, and it's quite logical to understand. So Krishna is the origin. He's the original source of all that exists. That's who he is. And then you could say, well, wait a minute. All right, if Krishna is the source, then why did he do all this anyway? Why did he create this thing that's happening? Why am I here? That's the next question. Why am I here? Why is all this stuff happening?
For his pleasure.
That's right. That's right. It's 100% correct. So you exist for the pleasure of Krishna. So what does that mean? That means you have to please Krishna by every thought, by every word, and every activity that you perform. Otherwise, you are not being natural. You're being unnatural. Can a fish, the fish's natural environment is to be in the water. If the fish is out of the water, he'll be in trouble. So if we do not act according to our nature, which is to please Krishna, then we must be in difficulty, we must be in anxiety. So I have a very simple formula, and it works 100% of the time, that Prabhupada has given me. And that is, you can understand, if you're in anxiety, It means it's because you're lacking Krishna consciousness. If you're not tasting the sweetest nectar at every second, it just means you're not Krishna conscious. Sorry. You're not Krishna conscious. You're not tasting the sweetest nectar at every minute. So all you have to do is become Krishna conscious. You see, and you taste the sweetest nectar at every minute. Simple thing.
Come in. This is your godbrother, Mahari Krishna.
Hey, Mahari.
Jai.
This is Shankar.
From Kalamazoo?
Grand Rapids.
Oh, Grand Rapids. Jai.
Jai.
Jai. We're blessed and honored by your presence. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I made it down.
Jai.
Jai, nice to see you.
Jai, that's nice to see you.
Have a seat over here. All right, Prabhu.
Yeah, have a seat over here.
So, are there any other questions? Yes.
Well, if Krishna is the source, but isn't Mother Yashoda or Mother Devaki the source of Krishna?
So the question is, Krishna had a mother, so is not the mother the source? That is Krishna's pleasure pastime. And he wants to also be a boy and have a mom, have a mother. That is his pleasure pastime. Actually, Yashoda is his daughter, actually. But for his own enjoyment, he plays that role of being the son. Just like his example is given that that Prime Minister of England, his name was Gladstone, during the reign of Queen Victoria, she was a very big ruler. At that time, the British Empire was very powerful. So to be the Prime Minister of the British Empire was a very big position, Prime Minister Gladstone. So one gentleman came to meet the Prime Minister. He's waiting out in the reception area. He's way past the appointment time. He's wondering, what's going on here? The Prime Minister is not letting me come in to see what's happening here. Finally, you know, the old days, they had those keyholes. You could see through them in the other room. He can look through the keyhole, you know, what's going on? And there was Prime Minister Gladstone out on his hands and legs with his grandson on his back. Little boy was going, giddy up, giddy up. So he was playing like he was a horse, you see, for his grandson. So he was getting more pleasure out of playing the horse for his grandson than he was by being the big Prime Minister of the British Empire, the big powerful Prime Minister. So that is from that we can understand that nature is also there in God, in Krishna. He would much rather take some role to be under his devotee's direction than to be the big controller of everything that exists. And it's stated like that. Krishna is ajita, he is unconquerable, but yet he becomes what? Jita, by his devotee's love. Krishna, as you were mentioning, for his pleasure, Sir Jeremiah, Krishna enjoys being subordinate to those who are completely sold out to him. In this material world, everybody is trying to move forward and, you know, claim as much property as they can, get as much money as they can, as much power, as much prestige as possible. You see? That's the general mood of the modern day so-called civilization. So, no matter how much they get, they will never get everything, and it will all be taken anyway. But for one who becomes completely sold out to Krishna, Krishna becomes their personal property. That person who owns everything, who controls absolutely everything, he will become your personal property. Just imagine what a big position that is. That's why devotional service is rarely bestowed upon a living being, because it gives you complete power over God by your love. It's very rarely given, pure devotional service. Krishna has to become subordinate to you when you achieve pure devotion. So he doesn't hand that out easily to any Tom, Dick, or Harry who comes in off of 80, 90. You see, Krishna is very, very fussy about who he gives pure devotional service to. So if we want to have that pure devotional service, we have to really qualify ourselves. We have to take shelter of someone who has it. You see, in this movement, we're doing that. We have Prabhupada. He has that pure devotional service. So we have to take shelter of Prabhupada. Take our guidance and direction from Prabhupada, because if we can sneak in under Prabhupada's lotus feet, then we'll get into that dimension, that domain of pure love of God. By Prabhupada's mercy, we can actually enter into that domain, pure love of God. Questions more? Yes.
You mentioned about that, you know, we should take initiation, should have a guru. And so many people take initiation. Well, but some disciples, they don't really close to the guru, and don't have personal relationship. And I know personally that, you know, I talk with many devotees that they don't satisfy it just because they got initiation.
One has to be one. Therefore, I recommend that one should be very discriminating and careful to choose a spiritual master that you can have a strong personal relationship with.
So it's important to have.
Oh yeah, that's what I strongly recommend that you choose a spiritual master with whom you can have a strong personal relationship. And if somehow or other your spiritual master is not always available, then you can also take Siksha Guru, instructing spiritual master. Find another senior, if your spiritual master is so busy preaching the other side of the world, it's hard to get in touch with him. You don't feel that strong connection you want, then connect also with other senior devotees who can be Siksha Gurus. You connect with them. They can also help you. The initiating guru is one, but you can have many Siksha Gurus who instruct you and inspire you. I know I have that situation. There are disciples of other gurus who take shelter of me because I give a lot of personal attention to anyone who approaches me, whether they're my initiated disciple or not. I don't discriminate. Anyone who approaches me, I try to give them as much personal attention as I possibly can. I make that my service. I don't manage big projects. I just focus on giving care and kindness to those who approach me for that.
But like in Russia, so many many gurus, but they have so many disciples.
Yeah.
So if like one guru cannot give attention to his disciple, this disciple cannot really find another Siksha Guru around because everybody is
Yeah. Maybe I should travel to Russia. Maybe I should travel in Russia. I've gone to some of the former Soviet Union countries already, and I'm starting to preach there. Maybe I should go into Russia itself.
You know, I'm doing counseling. Can people suffer from not have relationship?
Yeah.
Even it's said that, you know, the guru, you read his books, the instructions
Yeah.
in the books.
Maybe I should go into Russia. I've already gone into Latvia and Estonia and Lithuania, which is they're right on the edge of Russia. I'm preaching on the edge of Russia right now. Maybe I should go into Russia and preach as well. So I understand there is a small number of gurus and a huge number of disciples, and many disciples are having a hard time.
And some gurus, they don't even know the disciple. They just even, like you say, name, and they say, oh, I don't know. I'm working child.
They don't know the name of the temple even? Or the disciple's name?
Like the disciples. You know, I have worked with child protection, and one time I had child abuse, and I talked with guru about his disciple who is abused child, and he's like, I don't know who.
Didn't know who it was. His own disciple.
I don't really know.
Yeah, that is, well, that's one reason that I have taken up initiating disciples, because I understand there is a need. I like to go to temples that are underserved by spiritual masters, because I can fill in them. And it's like a filling. It's a need is there. So I'd like to do that. I like to go to areas that are being neglected by the spiritual masters in our society.
I don't know if it's neglected. Just so many, you know. And plus, like for Mataji, it's no chance there because...
Well, this is the advantage of being, in my situation, being a vanaprastha with a wife. It makes it easier for me. I have a wife also. This is Vishnupriya Devi Dasi, humbly in the back here. She's my wife. For those of you who don't know, she travels with me all over the world and assists me. She's Guru Mata for my disciples. So we travel all over the world. And why are you in the back, Manaji? Why are you not up here?
I'm comfortable.
Comfortable there? Okay.
Yeah, something to lean against, anyway.
So yeah, I'm trying to personally help to solve that problem, because I do have disciples of other gurus who also take shelter of me because their guru is so busy going here and there.
Many in Latvia also.
Yeah, I have many disciples of other gurus who come to me for siksha.
It's same, you know. I don't see different. It's Soviet Union. It's like, you know, even now it's different country, but consciousness, whatever, it's same.
Yeah, they're more universal.
So it's and like I say, you know, you come, you know, I'm not just, you know, I go and I talk with people, and just people come and they just gather around you, and like in Moscow, like Brahmachari did, we talk and then they just around you and they want personal relations.
That's in Moscow?
Like I was in Moscow, like in January, February.
Maybe we should go there.
I'm serious. It's like very needed. The root is there.
Maybe we should go to Moscow, Manaji. What do you think?
Well, I'm confident that the other spiritual masters will realize by your actions that they'll say,
they're scared.
No, they're not necessarily scared, but that they will see that you're setting really good, fine example. You're taking care of anybody.
Yeah, my whole program is to take care of people. That's my program.
Well, people are more important than things or projects.
Yeah.
You know, the people are the
ones that's right. That's right. I put people are on the top of the list. Projects, first thing is the people, and the projects come naturally when the people are well taken care of.
It's what I asked.
Yeah, they become enthusiastic to take care of whatever project.
Vidyan Maharaj built the temple in Moscow, and I used to say, you know, Maharajan can build this temple, huge temple, but who will be in temple? Because devotees neglected, you know, they like...
Yeah, I focus on the devotees. That's what I do. I focus on taking care of the devotees. And because Prabhupada took such good care of me, even though I wasn't a big name devotee in our movement. Chris, gradually now I'm getting some name now these days, but in the old days I was just a rank and file, unheard of brahmachari, out in some remote temple somewhere. And I used to write Prabhupada and he would write me back with such loving kindness. Every time I would write him, he would write me back and just shower me with mercy. Letter after letter after letter after letter. And I wasn't considered an important devotee by the managers. They wouldn't even want me to write Prabhupada. Then who are you to write Prabhupada? That would be their attitude, you know? So, somehow by Krishna's arrangement, I was instructed to write the first time I was told to write Prabhupada by Vishnu Jan Maharaj, and then I got hooked on writing Prabhupada after that. I would write him and he would answer me so many wonderful letters. So yeah, I think these problems can be resolved. What Prema Bhakti has said is true. I think when other gurus see, just like now, I have my e-course where I give every day a thought for the day to all of my, everybody enrolled. Jai Pataku heard about this and he signed up for my course also. Because he wants to see what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. The fact, he's in charge of congregational development, that says he's a minister of it, and what I'm doing is right up his, it's his department actually, congregational development. And I'm doing it on the lowest level, the grassroots of the grassroots level. Person to person, going deep into the heart of each person and really helping them overcome their obstacles on the pathway of bhakti. Bhakti Siddhanta said that even though he had so many, he opened 64 Gaudiya Mathas in India. He was saying, if I could make one person appear to be able to sell all those properties, He valued making even one person a pure devotee of Krishna more than maintaining all 64 temples that he had opened. Even if he lost every temple, that was all right if he could make one person a pure devotee. So that's the mood I take. Anyone who approaches me that wants help on how to become a pure devotee, I take them as the most important person in the whole universe. And just give them everything I have to help them overcome their obstacles and become a pure devotee of Krishna. And Krishna rewards me for that. I get a lot of nectar for doing that. And it's just the nectar just keeps increasing. Because I'm helping people to really taste the nectar of what it means to be Krishna conscious, purely Krishna conscious.
Like I say, I went in this winter, and in Moscow it's like, you know, no leaders, no, just devotees came, just evening, just stopped by a temple, and myself and another bhaktis who helped me, and we sit down, you know, like devotees all over place, and say, come on, come here, sit close. So finally everybody sit close, and we start talking, and finally, like after 1 hour, it's like big family. And one prabhu was there, and he's like, you know, complaining about nobody cares, nobody, you know. And after we had this discussion, I saw him, he sit down and start play, you know, like her bhajan. And I talked with another devotees, and I knew it was first time he just take mridanga and play. And then I asked him, and he said, yes, it was first time. He like come to temple, you know, play with everybody, and like, and I was saying, your temple,
yeah,
it's same your temple, well, like everybody else.
Yeah, this is what I want to establish all over the world, an atmosphere where the relationships between the devotees are very, very strong, very, very loving, very, very trusting, and very, very deep, because this is actually the foundation. This is described by Rupa Goswami. There are six loving exchanges: to give gifts to the devotees, to receive gifts from the devotees, to reveal your mind in confidence to the devotees, and to have the devotees hear the devotee reveal his mind to you also, and to give prasadam to a devotee and accept prasadam from a devotee. These are the six loving exchanges that go back and forth between Vaishnavas. So my firm conviction is that our society has not, our Krishna consciousness movement has not fulfilled its mission of inundating the world with Krishna consciousness, because we have not learned how to love each other according to Rupa Goswami's direction. We're still selfish, going around our own little orbits. You know, I'm a great devotee orbits. I'm such a great devotee. I'm so fixed up. Little orbits going around. So I'm pushing the basic principles, that if we can learn how to actually love one another and exchange love with one another in a very pure way on an ongoing basis, that will create such a sweet and wonderful atmosphere in our society that gradually the whole world will be engulfed in our movement. And the Vedic age will actually dawn on this entire planet. Where Bhaktisiddhanta's prediction about, you know, our desire, I mean, to say that the high court judges can wear tilak. Just imagine if you go to Washington and the president's wearing tilak. He's chanting japa in the morning in the White House lawn after doing deity worship in the White House. And, you know, the House of Representatives, they have a kirtan. The Senate, they have a kirtan every morning before they begin their discussions.
C-SPAN would be interesting.
Wouldn't that be incredible? What's that?
C-SPAN would be interesting to watch.
That's some TV, I don't know what it is.
It monitors the House and the Senate.
That's right. Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's what I want to see. See, I'm trying to push forward our movement in such a way that the whole world will be captured by this movement. That's my goal in life. To try to preach Krishna consciousness, I consider myself the most fallen, contaminated rascal, I'm just begging Prabhupada that I can be absolutely pure in every thought, every word, and every deed, so that I can preach in such a way that this whole world can actually come to Krishna consciousness. I always had that kind of a desire. I know when I was a young brahmachari, somebody told me that Prabhupada said it would be 300 years before the scientists would become Krishna conscious. And I became depressed when I heard that. Why 300 years? It's too long. So I was very bold. I wrote Prabhupada a letter. I said, Prabhupada, I want to make them Krishna conscious in the next 3 years. Can you imagine? And then Prabhupada was, he wrote me back. He was very pleased with my attitude. So, I always have that kind of a, you know, revolutionary zeal. Actually, I joined the movement. I felt that was my goal in life, to help to bring about a spiritual revolution on this planet. And I was trying to do it through music, and I wasn't getting anywhere. And then I saw that Prabhupada actually knew how to do it, so I decided to become his disciple, to assist him, because he was actually doing it. I really felt that was my goal in life, to help bring about a spiritual revolution on this planet. And I saw that Prabhupada was the one who knew how to do that. He had the formula, he had everything, and he had the grace of God. He had everything required to actually revolutionize the entire world. And I said, this is the movement I will join, because this is the movement which will actually save the world. You see? As I said in that poem that you quoted to me earlier, George, we were told that Prabhupada said like that. He said, this Hare Krishna movement will save the world in its darkest hour of despair. So, as far as I'm concerned, there's really nothing else to live for, to even breathe for, except for developing pure Krishna consciousness and for spreading it to every town and every village, to every man, woman, and child on the face of this planet. There's nothing else to live for, actually. There's no other reason to do anything or to think anything or say anything, except for becoming a pure devotee and flooding this entire planet with Krishna consciousness. Is there anything else that's worth the time and energy that you know of, Prabhu? You're my God brother.
Not really. That's the most important thing I can think
of. Course, body and soul together, we have to do that, obviously. You know, we have to work hard and make our money and, fix our broken car or flat tires. Those things are there. Bodily maintenance, that's understood. But those things should be on the back burner. Just like any lady who cooks, she knows that the rice you put on the back burner, and then you're doing a stir-fried vegetable that goes in the front burner, not the back burner. You know what I mean?
This is true.
So there are activities of bodily maintenance. We should get that so together. And that's actually a service to Krishna too. You get it so together that you can just back burner the whole thing. So you can focus on your real work, which is developing pure love of God and spreading it to all over the world as far as you can, in your neighborhood, in your city, in your town, in this way. So that's really what we have to do. We do our bodily maintenance, our job, our income, our family duties, running the kids here, running them there, those things we do. But we have that together. We have that together, and where we become expert at it, where you don't have to put all your mental energy into it. You can put your mental energy, even while you're doing those things, your mental energy is on purifying my consciousness and spreading Krishna consciousness. Any other questions?
You had mentioned flat tires. I've read that when things happen to us in our lives, mm-hmm. that from a mundane standpoint we would look upon as negative, whether it's a flat tire or bankruptcy or cancer or whatever it happens mm-hmm. to be, that we're actually supposed to look at it as Krishna's mercy. And I've read that, and I mm-hmm. think I can give intellectual assent to that. I understand it
right
here, but I don't really. Could you elaborate on
right.
it? Because it's something that I...
How does one cope with some devastating or even a minor or irritating circumstance as being the mercy of Krishna? Of course, the karmic principle is there. If I'm suffering some reverse, we can put them all under the name of reverses. There are minor reverses, medium reverses, and major reverses. They're all reverses. But actually, from the Krishna conscious perspective, there's no such thing as a reverse. Because, I'll give you a graphic example. I have a disciple named Rishikesh in California. He's formerly a Catholic priest. And after he decided to join the Hare Krishna movement, become a, you know, one of our initiated members, he came down with cancer. He'd been healthy his whole life, and as soon as he decided to surrender to Krishna, prostate cancer.
It would be hard to interpret that, wouldn't it?
And I felt, when I called him, I felt that he was, I felt that actually, I'm supposed to be his guru, but I was, as he was telling me his take on what he was going through, I was thinking, this man is my guru. Because he was in bliss. He said, now Krishna is burning off all of my past sins. You see, he was laughing. He was under threat of possibly dying from this prostate. They actually were able to get it into Gordon reversal and all that. It was successful. Actually, his attitude helped. Because instead of being devastated by the cancer, he was in bliss. He said, now Krishna is freeing me from all of my past sins. He's burning it off of me. And that's how he took it. And actually, he succeeded. Now he's back. He's energetic again. He overcame, he threw off the cancer because he didn't take it in a negative way. He said, this is Krishna's kindness upon me. I've been so sinful that now he's just burning off all of my sins. So if we take it as simply a burning off of our past sins, like a purging of the toxins, karmic toxins, which are clogging up our system. If you take it in that way, this is a purge of toxins out of my, you know, karmic toxins are being purged out of my karmic situation.
The sooner the better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada actually says like that in his Vyas Puja homage. It's written very nicely there. He says that, let me suffer the lot for all of my past sins, but let me not forget that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. Prabhupada is not praying, let me get free from those reactions. He said, let the reactions come. Let me burn off all of those reactions, you see. And in the state of Krishna consciousness. Of course, when you surrender to Krishna, actually it's minimized. You just get a token. But even that token, we have to take in a very, very Krishna conscious way. This is actually the kindness of the Lord. It's not easy to do that, but we see advanced devotees can do it, and they can do it remarkably well. Our godbrother Bhakti Tirtha Swami is dying from cancer, his whole body. He had to cut off his foot trying to stop the cancer from spreading and still it. And now his bones are deteriorating, his collarbone snapped. He's in horrible shape. But I went and visited him, and he was just like, he was effulgent and blissful, as if nothing was wrong.
Where is he at?
He's in Gitanagari now, getting ready to leave his body.
I knew he was not going to have his door, but...
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to die any day now, actually. The doctors are amazed. He should have died some time ago, according to medical science. He's just amazed that he's actually staying in his body. And he's so effulgent. He's enlivened in Krishna consciousness and inspiring and enlivening everyone who comes around him. Oh, yeah, I have a photograph of Sridhar Maharaj in his deathbed. He's laying there like this.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Oh, that's what, Prabhupada's godbrother?
No, our godbrother.
Oh. Well.
Sridhar Swami, the Jolly Swami.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
He passed away? Or?
Yeah. Mm. Liver cancer. He'd gotten, what's it called, hepatitis C, many years ago, and it finally got to him. When the knock had wiped him out. Maybe 2 years ago. 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah,
2 years ago.
Yeah, last year.
Last year, okay.
Right after the installation of the...
Oh, okay. He got to attend that and offer worship to them, and then he left his body. It's very auspicious timing. So, a devotee actually, in fact, Kunti Devi is one of the great lady devotees in our tradition, Vaishnavi. She says that, she prays that, my dear Krishna, please let those reverses, those calamities come to me again and again. She's begging for them. She says, because when they come, then I become fully absorbed in you, And when I'm fully absorbed in you, then I will no longer see birth and death. So she found that the negative reverse conditions were better for her Krishna consciousness than the easy times. So she was actually begging, send me more hardships, I like them. They're good for my Krishna consciousness. Of course, you don't have to pray for them.
I have a full plate for
them. You've got enough already, you don't have to pray for them. So we all have enough, I think. I don't think many of us have to pray for them. You know, we're so sinful now in the Kali Yuga. We don't have to beg for them. But whatever does come, we should try to see that it's Krishna's kindness upon us to help us become sober and realize that this material world is not our place. Questions more?
I was wondering, you're talking about the religion and the White House and stuff. Do you think Bush is doing anything? He's supposed to be a Christian and stuff. He's fairly...
Well, I can
he's
say
trying to push Christianity through the White House in a big way.
I can tell you that after seeing Clinton having illicit sex in the Oval Office, to hear George Bush on television quoting a Bible verse that, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me, that is some improvement. He was actually, that is a very beautiful prayer of Psalms. That by taking shelter of God, I have nothing to be afraid of. And he was quoting that in the White House on national television. And that is a good thing. But the fact is, it's really superficial. Because right. He also goes deer hunting in South Texas regularly, whenever he gets a chance, and inflicting evil upon these innocent deer. So it's, you know, but when you... Lip service is better than nothing, but it's not really enough.
Well, I'm saying, you think he's making some progress there, do you think? Do you think he's opening some doors so if a devotee ever...
I don't really think the doors are open. When I was recently preaching I went to the Muslim World recently. We're going to show the DVD of it. I engaged a whole hall full of Muslims in chanting Hare Krishna recently in Istanbul. And the... Wow. Just after doing that, either that or the night before, we went to a wealthy businessman's home and engaged all these wealthy class people in chanting Hare Krishna, also wealthy class Muslims. But the night after that, I dreamt that I was, that George Bush and I were having a conversation as friends. So I wrote him a letter, actually, when I was in Istanbul, an email, and I didn't get any response. So I didn't think I would. But I took it as a duty that I had actually had a conversation. We had met together as friends. Actually, we used to be neighbors.
Yeah.
When I was in Austin, I lived a few blocks from the governor's mansion. Our center was a few blocks from the governor's mansion. So we were, you know, we just lived a few blocks from each other. When he was out, he'd be out jogging. I'd be out doing my Japa walk. So I felt that we were in some way connected, being both from Texas. And anyway, I dreamt like that, so I wrote him, but there was no response. So I don't really think the door is opened, although...
Well, he's doing that.
It's just the modes of nature swinging.
Faith-based initiatives and stuff, he's trying to give money to...
No, I think in many ways...
He's trying to, like, help people off drugs, and...
No,
I mean, that was never happening before.
He was... I know when he was in Texas, he was promoting abstinence as a solution for, instead of birth control, abortion. He's promoting abstinence. Teach the children to abstain from sex until marriage. So in many ways, on moral principles and God consciousness.
That's a big movement in the Christianity right now. They're trying to teach abstinence.
Yeah, no, I respect and admire him for those things.
And I've also heard that he reads the Bible. They have Bible study every day in the White House and stuff.
Well, I was just thinking, because at that time his daughter was going to the University of Texas, if we could somehow have gotten her a book, you know, that would have been great. They were going to school there in Austin at the campus. Somehow get a book in their hand, you know. Of course, they're tailed by the Secret Service at every minute, but... Yes?
The other thing, and Bush is trying, but he got in with the wrong person. Remember that someone...
Yeah, but he brought in one Hindu bogus guru as a representative of the Hindu community.
Oh,
he was
really?
Teaching bogus concocted thing, and Bush had a meeting with him. In the White House, they had some big Hindu guru who was just bogus, and to meet him. If it had been an ISKCON member, it would have been another thing. But so the karma is not, he's just not quite there yet. Otherwise, he would have been attracted to have an ISKCON guru or GBC and to see him, you know. But instead, he's meeting with some bogus hodgepodge.
You don't know who it was, or no, you don't want to say? Or
huh?
You don't want to say who it was? Or
it's being recorded right now. The lecture is being recorded. I don't want to say it. I don't want to have it out there on the internet.
Okay.
I can tell you off the...
Okay.
After I turn off the MP3 recorder, I can tell you.
All right. Yeah, I'll just...
Who it was. Yeah,
I just wanted to...
Yeah.
Okay.
So any other questions? If not, maybe what's the next item on the agenda?
DVD.
DVD?
We can do that, or...
Why don't we have another kirtan? Short kirtan.
Short one. Yeah.
And then we'll do the DVD and then prasadam. Or do you want to do prasadam and then the DVD? What's better, Manaji? You're good at all these.
Yeah, I think it'd be better after prasadam.
After
prasadam?
Okay.
No, everybody won't be able to watch. Someone will go into the kitchen to do the backup, and not everybody will be able to see.
Well, I guarantee when it comes to the leading the Muslim in kirtan, everybody will come.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
That part, that one everyone sees, it's only like 5 minutes at the end.
That's great.
Everybody will want to see that. Do you think it's okay, or we should do it first?
Whenever I feel.
Okay. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Now we'll do some more kirtan.